Hello and welcome to the Monocle Culture Show. I'm Robert Bounds. In 1989, the cult teen movie Heathers was released in cinemas. Written by Daniel Waters and directed by Michael Lehman, the dark comedy wasn't a box office hit, but over its 30 years, it's become a firm favourite of film fans worldwide, and it's influenced other teen classics such as Mean Girls and Clueless. It's also helped to skyrocket the careers of its two lead actors, Winona Ryder and Christian Slater, and of course introduced us to famous lines like...
Did you have a brain tumor for breakfast?
Such a pillowcase. Fuck me gently with a chainsaw. Do I look like Mother Teresa?
Now, Heathers has turned into a musical which started out in America and has just transferred to the West End stage here in London. It's directed by Andy Fickman, a comedy specialist who usually is found to be directing for the screen, and the music and lyrics are by Kevin Murphy and Lawrence O'Keefe, who between them worked on musicals like Legally Blonde and Reefer. So how easy is it to adapt a teen comedy about cliques and killers into an all-singing, all-dancing spectacle? Well, to answer that question, I'll be joined in the studio by the arts and entertainment writer for The Telegraph, Alice Vincent, and theatre critic for the International New York Times, Matt Wolfe. Heathers, then, is not your typical high school movie. Sure, it has jocks, geeks, and the popular kids, but where it lacks malls and makeovers, it makes up in staged suicides and explosives. The story follows Veronica Sawyer, a nobody turned somebody, who finds herself in with the Heathers, three beautiful girls of the same name who rule the school with croquet mallets of iron.
Hello, Heather.
Veronica, finally. I got a note of Kurt Kelly's. I need you to forge a hot and horny but realistically low-key note in Kurt's handwriting, and we'll slip it onto Martha Dumbchuck's lunch tray.
Shit, Heather, I don't have anything against Martha Dumbstock.
You don't have anything for her either. Come on, it'll be very. The note will give her shower nozzle masturbation material for weeks.
While she relishes the power and the popularity this group provides, Veronica realises she hates her new best friends. And that's when a new student, the mysterious JD, enters the scene. Under the spell of this reclusive bad boy, Veronica finds herself accidentally killing several of her classmates in situations that the two of them disguise as suicides.
Dear Diary, my teen angst bullshit has a body count.
She tries to distance herself from JD, who is hell-bent on destroying the whole school and thus the student hierarchy within it.
Hi, I'm sorry. Technically, I did not kill Heather Chandler, but hey, who am I trying to kid, right? I just want my high school to be a nice place. Amen.
The stage version, Heathers the Musical, follows this plotline fairly closely, with a few minor changes, a lighter touch, and a lot more shimmying at its current location, the Theatre Royal Haymarket. Let's hear a bit of this to get us in the mood.
I like looking hot, buying stuff they cannot.
I like
drinking hard, maxing dad's credit card.
I like
skipping gym, scaring her, screwing him.
I like
killer clothes,
kicking nerds in the nose.
If you like the ball, go play dolls, let your mommy fix you a snack.
Whoa!
Or you could come smoke, pound some rum and coke in my Porsche with the quarterback.
Whoa! Whoa! Whoa!
Okay, song and dance and a lot of it. Alice and Matt, welcome to the programme.
Thank you.
Lovely to have you round the table here. We are fresh-ish, relatively fresh, from the press night of Heathers the Musical. What do we think about it? I kind of got on the train that night, not with many of the words reverberating, but with definitely a spring in my step. Alice, how about you?
Yeah, it's sort of like guzzling a load of hundreds and thousands, isn't it?
it's a sugar rush, right?
Yeah, it's a real sugar rush. I mean, I actually, I saw it at the previous venue, which is the Other Palace in kind of Victoria Way, and it was packed to the rafters with tiny teenagers, and it was so much fun. I had the most fun. I wouldn't say I prefer it to the film, but it was a good lark.
Matt, where do you stand on it? You are normally in the role of reviewing all sorts of stuff there, everything from the avant-garde to the very popular.
Yeah.
This is very popular.
Yeah, this certainly is an avant-garde. And I also saw it off Broadway a couple of years ago, which is interesting that it's never actually played Broadway, whereas now it's in the heart of the West End. You don't get much more heart of the West End-y than the Haymarket. I kind of thought it sat most naturally at the Other Palace, where there was something about the informality of the place in the kind of let's put on a show quality of the show mm-hmm. that were a perfect match. That the Haymarket is an interesting theater because it's, you know, Oscar Wilde and Shakespeare and Shaw, and all of a sudden it's like the Heathers. But, you know, these kids that Alice is referring to are still there, I guess, funded by mom and dad, lowering the average age of the people at that theater by about 40 years. And what's great about it, I think, mostly are the two leads, of whom later probably. They're wonderful.
Yeah, we both of you want to focus out on those stars at the end of the show, or soon-to-be stars, we surmise, anyway, from their roles in this. Before we talk about the actors themselves, let's talk about the characters, the story, the wit of it. I mean, as I said to Holly, it sort of really picks you up. Within two sort of song and dance numbers, someone's gone from being unpopular to being popular. They've kind of dissed a former best friend, or like the kind of the sad sack kind of girl in the school. There's all sorts of kind of political intrigue going on within, yeah, two or three dance numbers. It really picks you up by the scruff of the neck and carries you somewhere else quickly, doesn't it, Alice?
Yeah, I think because it doesn't have those constructs of those immediate touchstones of high school movies, which the film slips so much into. So Michael Lehman was very much, the director, was very much making Heathers the film as a kind of skewer or a pastiche of the John Hughes films of the 80s. And so if you've seen the film, then you are coming into this and you know what it's about. But they have to get those narratives in place. They have to get those tropes in place. And that does mean fleshing out the narrative of the original Heathers a little bit. You know, we don't previously learn about how Veronica becomes a cool girl, but we do in the musical. And then suddenly we are back in school, all of the social cliques are lined up, and there's a lot of double casting going on as well, which works really hard to explain the intricacy of those narratives.
Yeah, there's a lot of that. There's the dads of the jocks' fathers, mm-hmm. who then have various different roles, who are very good. I mean, the two guys playing those roles in this production, I thought were sort of particularly good. That's interesting. Thing. I mean, sort of from a choreographical and sort of purely theatrical way, Matt, there's some real tricks in this as well. There's some slow motion scenes, some fight scenes that are kind of frozen, and there's quite a lot of clever, tricky work of theatre in this, I suppose.
Yeah.
Don't worry, I'm not calling it avant-garde. Don't make a face, Matt.
I'm a little skeptical of the word choreography because I thought it was mostly calisthenics. And I was kind of yearning for something that was an actual dance as opposed to just sort of karate moves in the air. But that's okay. I mean, the thing about all of these, Mean Girls is now a musical on Broadway and it has almost exactly the same template as this. Everybody's talking about Jamie on the West End, much the same. Interesting, they almost all have a song in the second act where the plus-sized, misunderstood female friend gets her big moment to shine and raises the roof.
You can throw Bring It On into that as
well. Okay. Yes, exactly. Yeah. So I'm beginning to think, because, you know, how much of a future is there as a theater critic? Let's be honest. Why don't we all just band together and write our own version of these? Because they're inexhaustibly successful.
And did you see that? I mean, as someone that's seen both of you, is there some cynicism in the writing of this, in the plotting of this? It's wanting to make your audience happy or entertain your audience. Do you feel that maybe that the audience are being pandered to with this?
I think there is some cynicism in it, in its conception, but I think what's disarming about it as a production is the fact that, again, principally the main performers are so embedded in the material in the best way that they completely win you over wherever the point of origin of the show may lie.
And I think what's interesting about what they've chosen to do with it on stage is that they have decided to keep Heathers in the 80s. But what they've done is they've applied incredibly 2018, not even millennial, 2018 attitudes and, you know, for want of a better catch-all, political correctness to the play. And there's nothing wrong to be said with that. But I was really confused, like, why make this about the 80s when it doesn't have the politics of the 80s? And for me, that was the main friction and tug in it. That's what maybe sits uncomfortably, because yes, Heathers does make a slightly uncomfortable watch, but it always did. It's always been a satire. So in order to smooth that over for the stage, that's where we hit a few stumbling points, I think.
Yeah, it's a kind of brutal late 80s film in some ways. It's kind of like it's a precursor to True Romance or something. There's something that I always thought there was something of that in it. It's a little tougher than you kind of think, certainly as far as this, compared to this musical, I would say.
Well, one thing that's really interesting, which we haven't really touched on yet, and it's the most bizarre aspect of it to me, but this has more to do with life than art, is that the narrative, of course, involves school shootings and violence. And when the movie came out, people thought, well, that's a fantastical idea. Who's going to wreak havoc in a school? Now, particularly in my country, I'm afraid, this is a commonplace. And apparently, during the recent school shootings in Orlando, Florida, there was actually a production of Heathers happening somewhere near where the shootings were taking place. And there was some talk about maybe closing the production down because it just wasn't proper to be carrying on. And in fact, everyone thought, no, the musical can in fact be a corrective to whatever this psychosis is that's out there. And I thought, seeing the show again a couple nights ago in London, there is a lot of that at the end. You know, can we put whatever this malaise is behind us and just try to be kinder to one another? And that, I think, is where the show has got very interesting.
That's kind of the take home at the end of it. It's not love will conquer all, but it's actually a little bit of niceness goes a long way in a kind of in a hyper-stylized, hyper-violent in this instance, and obviously hyper-mean environment of the typical American high school. There's something in that, I guess, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's something interesting that you say about the shootings. I did discuss this with Andy Fickman, the show's director. They deal with it in, I think, a very deft way. A lot of the violence is mitigated because, obviously, 30 years ago, wasn't the same epidemic that it is now. But there was a TV version made. They've been trying to make a TV version of Heathers pretty much as long as the film's been out. In fact, they were trying to make a TV version the minute the film came out, and they decided to go with a pilot called 90210 instead.
Yeah.
And they finally brought it to the fore earlier this year, and then there was the Parkland shooting. But also they tried to flip that narrative as well and make the nerdy kids the kind of the social upper echelons. And it didn't work. It kind of became picked up as an alt-right narrative, and it went horribly wrong, and it was cancelled. But it's funny how this format doesn't work in other places.
So it sounds like they're trying to set it in Palo Alto or something as well.
really
odd and specific.
Yeah.
What about the music itself? There's a lot of it in it. There isn't much exposition that is done in speaking parts. I mean, I guess there's the musicals where there's 5 songs and there's the musicals where there's 35 songs, and this is definitely one of the latter. There's all sorts of kind of genres of stuff, I suppose, in it as well. Matt, what did you think about the music?
Well, you mentioned Legally Blonde, which has a creative connection to this. And I mean, not that that's, you know, Sondheim, but there is something about that where I think the score actually stands apart rather better than this. I think the score of this is fine as part of the whole. I'm not sure I'd want to kind of listen to it in any kind of separate context. It's kind of relentlessly peppy and on. The whole show is very on. I thought at the Haymarket it was a little more on than it needed to be. It had got a little bit aggressive. Again, at the other palace, it seemed to be a little more calibrated, not trying to kind of assault us with how enthusiastic we are 24/7.
You're absolutely right. It was very on, and I think that spurred on maybe press night. I don't know whether that makes a discernible difference.
Sure,
you
sure.
can certainly tell us about that. And also the idea of it, it is because it's a musical, you kind of feel there is one speed and it's full speed ahead.
I think the audience too. The audience is so on before it started.
And how does that work? How does that work in terms of the nuts and bolts of, do you have to consider that it's press night, that it's this, that it's all of these things, and take into account as a critic, Matt, what the audience are doing that night, what mood they're in?
I don't think so, really, because at the other palace, there were no press nights. That show wasn't actually open to review, and it was just as enthusiastic, if not more so, than at the Haymarket. I think every show has its kind of natural topography, and this is the topography of this material.
Yeah. Did it get you on, Alice? I mean, is this like, because it really was, right? It was kind of, Holly and I were lit, sort of, we were sort of pulled back in our seats by the G-force of the performance.
I went with a girlfriend and the pair of us were kind of sat there kind of just like grinning inanely at each other at times. Like, it was really, like, we felt about 105, but it was...
I did too, yeah.
Yeah, but no, it was really fun. But I think it's interesting that you mentioned the music and you specifically say you wouldn't listen to it. And I agree with you, I wouldn't. Although there's a song called Brain Freeze, and the kind of the adult knowingness of that lyrics, it is genius.
Does your brain suck on that straw, get lost in the pain? Happiness comes when everything numbs. Who needs cocaine? Freeze your brain.
What I would say is that the reason why this musical is so incredibly popular is that it's a sort of Gen Z version of why Hamilton was so popular, and that is because people are listening to the soundtrack before they see the show. So that's partly why they're so excited. It's partly why there's so much enthusiasm, because they're coming to the show and it's like a pop concert. They're watching these songs they've been streaming on Spotify for months performed in real life in front of them.
And that was and the Brain Freeze song is, as I guess, the standout song. It's maybe the
personally speaking,
scene in the thing. Right. And we'll talk about the lead actor as well, I suppose, who's obviously the protagonist of that, as introduced pretty much in that scene. It's a funny thing. Should a musical be able to exist outside of its performance? Should we be able to? We talked about Chess, which was, I loved the album because my parents had it on LP, and so I loved it as a rock album when I was a kid, and then couldn't believe that it actually, you could see these people doing it on stage. Can you separate these? Should you be able to separate these?
What was really interesting is we seem to be going back to what I thought was impossible to retrieve, which was a musical theater landscape from the 50s almost, where the scores were known. A lot of shows from the 80s for the next quarter century or so, the show was the star, but people didn't really follow the music of it. And I think Hamilton has had a lot to do with this. And now, yeah, the show kind of sets the bar, and then all the stage musical has to do, and I say that semi-ironically because it's quite a lot, is deliver on material people already know.
And that goes for the fact that it's a well-known cult film, obviously successful as a DVD, successful as a video, all the rest of it, big in rental, but not big at the box office when it came out. And on the subject of which, Holly interviewed the director, Michael Lehman, a couple of weeks ago, the director of the original movie, that is, about how it's been an enduring success despite its initial box office failure.
I think that the particular humor of this piece, the nature of the language, the way the humor is played, the darkness of the humor, provides a take on high school that nobody else has ever really done. So this still stands on its own. You know, the movie's been influential in many ways, but Dan's writing is so specifically great that people who imitate him, they do well, but it's not quite the same. His voice is very particular. And we did have a terrific cast. And so, you know, I'm surprised that people are still talking about it 30 years later, but when I think about it and think, well, why would they be? There are a lot of good reasons why it still kind of has a life.
So that was Michael Lehman speaking to Holly recently. So it's a funny one. This obviously, the trend is not a new one. The idea of movies being turned into stage shows. When that first started happening, Matt, what was your feeling? Did you think this was a sort of theatrical sellout, or did you think it was inevitable? Did you welcome it with open arms?
Movies becoming stage shows?
Yeah.
It's all about the brand these days. The thing about the musical theater world, both sides of the Atlantic, is there aren't really superstars anymore of the theater who are willing to stay with the show long enough for a show to break even. And because people aren't running a charity, you have to figure out a way for the show to actually be profitable. So one obvious way is to have a pre-existing title where it sort of doesn't matter who you drop into it. People aren't going to Mean Girls on Broadway, which, by the way, has in the cast the original New York star of Heathers. So that's kind of a bit theatrically meta. But people aren't really going because they want to see performers X, Y, and Z. They're going because they want to see a brand displaced. And this is not going to go away anytime soon.
Is that part of the interest of watching this stuff, Legally Blonde, Mean Girls, etc., kind of seeing something theatrically displaced, Ellis? Is there anything? And, well, how have they got around this? Not as a critic necessarily, but as a punter, as a fan, of kind of going, how are they going to get around this one? Or I'm looking forward to seeing how they transform this tricky scene into something on the stage.
I mean, as a fan, it's always, you always want more. So yeah, you're getting more, but I don't know how often it succeeds. I mean, to jump to a totally different genre, watching Harry Potter and the Cursed Child is like dyed-in-the-wool Potter millennial fan was massively frustrating because they broke the untouchable rules of Harry Potter in the process. So, you know, you can sometimes be deeply unsettling to see these things sort of pushed on stage and broken with the rules and played about with. Alternatively, you know, recently going and seeing Bring It On in Southwark Playhouse, and seeing, you know, this kind of teenage movie brought to life again 15 years later was incredibly heartening. Yeah. So it just depends what they do with it.
We've been trying not to talk about the actors, who are very fine in this production. I would say that kind of goes right down the line. I mean, it, as you say, it's very on production, Matt, but I mean, it's enlivening. I don't mind being kind of caught by the scruff of my neck and carried over to the front of the stage by these guys. You wanted to mention Jamie Moscato,
yeah,
who plays JD, who's the Christian Slater, of course, in the original movie,
right,
who does an amazing turn.
I think he's great. I first became aware of him, I think, about 4 years ago. There was a show at Southwark Playhouse called Dogfight, which was based on a not very well-known movie from the early 90s. So another, you know, movie turned stage show, except in that case, the movie wasn't particularly out there. Just as sort of in Heathers, Jamie was subordinate to a leading female performer, in that case called Laura Mathewson, who was great, as Carrie Hope Fletcher is here. So in both shows, he's sort of propped up the leading woman who gets a lot of deserved attention. But he does it, I think, with real sort of style. And this is a tricky role, JD, in Heathers, because he's not a nice guy, to put it mildly. And I've been interested both times I've seen the show, although the show kind of invites a panto response. And I was a bit worried at the curtain call both times that he was going to be booed like the villain gets booed nightly in Dreamgirls, which is ridiculous. But the audience really has responded to him because I think they're responding to his craft. He does it very, very, very well. You feel as if there is actually a well-rounded character there in a show where actually a lot of the supporting characters aren't allowed that. I mean, the two jocks are the two jocks and, you know, the kind of parents are what they are and the gay dads are what they are. But with him, it's prismatic. It keeps changing. And that's, I think, really, really skillful. He also sings very well.
Yeah, he does. And he fights quite well. Mm. And he's properly quite ghoulish and scary when he needs to be. And actually, I found at times when he was trying to be the sort of romantic interest, there was still quite a lot of... Mm-hmm. He kind of gave me the willies in a way. I mean, he's lit and dressed in quite a kind of contemporary, we might say, school shooter kind of way. He's not kind of Christian Slater cool leather jacket. Mm-hmm. He's a little bit frightening and contemporary than that.
In the first half, he is terribly charming. And then there's that switch and you say it's ghoulish. That's what it is. Mm. He suddenly becomes incredibly macabre and quite threatening in a way that actually I don't think Christian Slater ever managed. Mm. Christian Slater was sinister, but there was always something a bit too adult about Christian Slater, whereas I think the JD in the stage show is convincingly adolescent. And I think that's all the more unnerving as a result.
And he's kind of not, whereas Christian Slater in the movie is a little bit more of, he's a bit more of the jock than the goth and the outsider. You can imagine him being one of the jocks kind of thing, right? Whereas in this, he's built differently, definitely looks different. He's got the different haircut. He's a definite kind of offering, I suppose.
Yeah, he's hovering around the edges dressed in black. And you think, what is this, Hamlet? Rock, rock and roll Hamlet?
And I wonder what his pedigree is, because this seemed to me to be very much, I mean, I know it's set in an American high school and stuff, but it seemed like one huge kind of audition. because everyone has to do so much sort of stuff. It felt almost like a kind of degree show or something.
Well, everything, I haven't seen him in that much, but everything I've seen him in, he's played American, although he is English. He does a flawless American accent, although these days that's not saying much, because I have to say most British performers now do flawless American accents because they sort of have to and it's easy for them to do, which has changed a lot from when I first moved here. And he's good at kind of angling the supposedly repellent character in a way that you find something fascinating, which is exactly what he had to do in Dogfight, where he played a misogynistic Marine in early 1960s America who you think kind of yuck, but then as it goes on, you see actually there's somebody there worthy of redemption.
Jamie Moscato playing JD in Heathers, the musical. Alice, you wanted to talk about Carrie Hope Fletcher, the sort of co-lead in this, I suppose. Obviously the female character, she's wonderful, but tell us where she came from.
Well, the easy answer would be to say YouTube. That's not strictly true. She was on stage in Les Mis at 7. And then I think she's the only actress to play, and this, Matt, is where I go to you and say, what was the name of her character?
Eponine.
Yes. Uh-huh. Okay. She's the only actress to play child Eponine and adult Eponine.
Okay.
She returned and then played her as a grown woman. She's sort of been signed to acting agencies since she was 3 and stuff. She is in many ways a stage school kid. However, she sort of mitigated this potential stage school kid itis by
there is a cure for it.
We all know what I mean. The unlikely remedy of becoming a vlogger. She sort of embarked on a YouTube career, I think, about 6 years ago, and she followed the Justin Bieber route of covering songs and amassed this enormous YouTube following, and as her musical videos paved way to kind of talking about her love life and talking about body image and generally being a kind of all-round, influential, entertaining presence. She's got sort of about 750,000 followers now, 750,000 followers, subscribers on YouTube, loads on Instagram and Twitter. And I think that's partly why she said in interviews that I brought the new generation to Les Mis. And this is definitely why Heathers has succeeded. But what's so interesting is I think because she's not just a triple threat, she's a quadruple threat in that she is a vlogger, but because she's got genuine acting, performing chops, she's not reviled in the same way that, say, Tanya Burr, another very famous YouTuber who recently tried to get into stage acting, has been. Because you can't deny her talent.
No, indeed. It's a really interesting thing. I'd have had no idea if it weren't for you suggesting this, and you know, for suggesting her sort of backstory, as it were. I've watched videos on her, of YouTube and on her singing along to songs, sitting on her bed, just showing you around her hotel room, going, wow, I can't wait to get in the bath. This is amazing. I normally stay in crappy places and da-da. So there's all sorts of stuff. You wonder when the camera's going to... Well, the camera obviously is turned off.
Yeah.
But it's an odd thing. It's an odd thing because I suppose most of the things we talk about on programmes like this aren't like people who rose to fame through being a very good actor, but also, I guess, getting their popularity through YouTube and showing you what's on the handbag. So it's a tricky one. And presumably it's a really tough thing to negotiate. You have to lean extra heavily on your auspicious acting talent in order to not feel like be the dick that is doing the vlogger stuff. So I wanted to ask you, we said this before we switched on the microphones, Alice, about who was in the audience on the night that you were there. Maybe it was the same when you were there. Holly and I went a few days before you did, I think, Matt. The audience, the theatre was full of kids, 15, but right down to sort of 8 years old. Half of them were, I guess, press night. There were a few rows of critics. But then it was alive with kids who were all super excited.
It was like a school disco. Everyone was dressed up. There was like, you went out into the lobby and they were making slush puppies and playing 80s disco music.
Yeah.
It was one of the best nights out I've had in a long time, which says something about my social life. However... No, it was fun. It was girlish teenage fun. And I think that is actually in testament, in part, to Carrie Hope Fletcher. Yes, she's a very good actress. Yes, she makes Veronica very cuddly, which I did have some issues with because Winona Ryder plays Veronica as an unlikable, sort of joyfully detestable heroine.
Yeah.
And so I sort of didn't really want this Veronica to be my new best friend. But she does it very well. And I think maybe you do get an element of that enthusiasm of the audience who all feel like they know her inside out because they've watched her videos for years.
There's one thing of following someone's career and being a regular theatre goer and wanting to see someone new in a certain role, but the feeling that you know the inside of their handbag and the hotel rooms they stay in, and having watched them sing things from Les Mis and any old song while sitting on their bed at home is an amazing weird entry into going to the Theatre Royal Haymarket, right? I mean, it's as Matt said at the beginning of the show, George Bernard Shaw, Oscar Wilde, all these kind of things, and suddenly we're stomping along. And I think it can maybe only be a good thing because at least it's a new audience that think the theatre is a fun thing to go and do and be present at. Am I right? I don't know. That's what I think.
That's my viewpoint as well.
Yeah,
she's also written 3 books. I'm told. I haven't read any of them, but I'm told that her latest one is actually set in the world of the theater. And I think this is so fascinating that here's this mid-20-something woman who is absolutely a creature of the theater. Yes, of, you know, the world of the electronic age and technology, but it's all about feeding back to the theater. And that's really, as somebody who loves the theater, I find that very touching because it needn't be the case. So obviously she feels some sort of very deep connection. And I think what's great about her is she's, and this is a ridiculous adjective, but it's just true of her, she's very real. You know, a lot of these people you feel like the shellac of narcissism, and there's none of that with her.
We've spoken about Carrie Hope Fletcher and Jamie Moscato. We've talked about Heathers the musical. We might go back one day when we have children all of our own. Or you can borrow some to go along. Who knows? Thank you both very much indeed. That brings us to the end of today's programme. Heathers the Musical is on at the Theatre Royal Haymarket until the 24th of November. Thanks to my guests today, Alice Vincent and Matt Wolfe, and of course to my producer, Holly Fisher. I'll be handing over to my colleagues for the next couple of weeks while I head off on holiday, but do tune in next week when Crazy Rich Asians will be up for discussion. You've been listening to the Monocle Culture Show. I've been Robert Bound, and thank you very much for tuning in.